Hey everybody, welcome to Reality Rehap Ups, that small corner of the Rob Has a Podcast universe that Rob kind of pretends he has nothing to do with, and sometimes it's because he wants to look the other way and let us run with what is often a scintillating controversial discussion of shows such as the one we're covering tonight, episode 10 of The Amazing Race Canada season 4. My name is Jessica Leese, and with me as always is the man who finds himself in many sticky situations, Mr. Dan Heaton. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jess. Welcome back. You've returned for, I can't believe it, we're ready to the final three teams now. I feel like we just started.
It's true. This is really, the summer has flown by, and with it, so has the program. And next week, we're going to be racing for the $250,000. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's weird because I would have thought 10 teams, you kind of think, oh, I wish we had more, you know, but I do kind of like this 11 legs, 11 episodes, because you really have fewer down points. I feel like, especially at the end, like getting that non-elimination at the final four, it's kind of like, ugh. So it's kind of nice to go 5-4-3 and right in a row.
Yeah. And I mean, how many Hamilton legs could they shoehorn in there?
Thankfully, not too many.
Thankfully, just the one. St. John seems like a great place. And they, I think when you have a show like Amazing Race Canada, where we're spending a lot of time in Canada. And I know that this is something you and Mike talked about last week. It's something we've talked about a lot. I think it's sometimes tricky to balance, like, here is a location where a lot of Canadians already live and they know their way around and it's Canada, what can we say, with coming up with enough interesting things to do to make a good TV show that makes Canada continue to be proud of itself. And I think they accomplished that here. I think this was a great leg full of interesting tasks. Maybe some of them could have been done in a variety of places, but at least these ones were relatively fun to watch.
Yeah, and having there be, you know, a face-off and so much on the line, it's almost, and a pretty place, it's one of those situations where as long as they put together kind of a nice leg, and this is nothing against St. John at all, but you know things are going to work out, especially with, they didn't know this, but with this group of four teams, you figured you were going to have some fireworks and some fun here.
We had a good combination here. And I am fond of saying that, you know, you have a good location, you have good teams, and you have good tasks, and you need two of the three to make a leg that's worth watching. And we had two of the three. So not, and again, not to knock on New Brunswick at all, but it could have been anywhere, and I think it still would have been a great leg.
True. And we also had this leg, a nice amount, nice in quotes, of product placement. So this was a leg where the show made some money. So they like it.
Yeah. Well, apart from all of the legs where the town blatantly pays for the product placement, that was how we got Sudbury last season. The Sudbury Tourism Board said, hey, can you guys come in and film a leg and make it look good? We'll get Trebek. And this leg, you know, brought to you by hotels.com. And I thought this was maybe the most blatantly product placement-y leg since the Orange Julius of season 2.
Yeah, it's up there. I tend to sometimes forget, like some listener reminded me about the last season where they had to get all the Petro points, I think it was.
Yep.
Which, yeah, Cameron Taylor, I want to give credit for that. But ask if this was worse than that. And it's so hard to say because I did kind of enjoy our discussion about the Petro points. So I wouldn't say that's worse. I mean, this was kind of your typical Amazing Race, go deliver a bunch of stuff tasks. And they just had some glowing shots of the amazing filtering you can do through hotels.com's website and app.
I still don't think it's worse than the time that everybody had to pretend on Survivor that Jack and Jill was a funny movie.
Yeah, that there's definitely worse situations. I mean, Jeff Probst trying to sell that everyone's starving and they want to eat some Pringles. I mean, there's many worse things they could, or Mountain Dew or something. So here, I didn't bother me. Plus, it's the first task of the leg. Well, basically, I mean, they had to find the cars, which apparently still were hard for one team, but pretty much the first task. It's something to kind of spread them out and get them ready and set up the detour. So it didn't bother me too much. It's like one of those things where because it was so early and didn't really impact the placement, I'm like, okay, they did that. Now let's move on and do something fun.
Yeah, well, speaking of product placement, I also have to call out, BMO is here to help. You have a loony on your card for this leg of the race. Yeah, thanks, BMO. That's helpful.
Yeah, come on, BMO, pick it up. You know, it's like, BMO's, they're out of money. They're like, we already paid for everything. We made him go to our central branch the one time. We don't have time for this. We're giving you nothing next week. Zero. So find your own way.
Although we did get like a, they were standing on a corner in front of a BMO. We got the camera like zoomed over, very meaningfully lingered on the BMO for a second. And I'm like, no, you don't get that, BMO. You gave everybody a loony. That's, you know, you, if you want the product placement, you got to pony up.
Yeah. And that was the thing that made the hotels.com stand out more, was just the way that it kind of, the camera again, kind of lovingly looked at the app, like, look at this beautiful thing that can do. And then they were like going to like Howard Johnson's and like these, not even just like these random hotels in the city. So, you know, it didn't really sell me. It would have sold me more if they were going to these really fancy, amazing locations.
Yeah, that is true. Although you need to know that Hotels.com provides a range of budget options.
That is true. You can filter for that with the special filter. So this task, you know, the main thing was, of course, the first of several Jillian freakouts and then Ashley calling it the best show ever, which I enjoyed very much. So, and I expect we'll see more of that next week from Jillian. But really, beyond that, it was kind of like, I didn't totally understand. I guess some were close enough to walk to and then others were driving, because obviously the one was very far away where we had, they had to cross the highway and everything. But it was, I was a little confused at first by how this was set up.
Yeah, I think it looked like you had to navigate yourself to all these different places. And I'm sure you've been in that situation where you've been someplace and there's a giant highway and the place you have to be is on the other side of the highway. And if you're not willing to drive on the highway itself, like Emmett was apparently not, what are you going to do?
He's not going on the highway. He's got a plan. Forget it if your shoes are two sizes too small.
And can we talk about that for a second? Can we talk about the fact that Jillian accepted a pair of shoes that were two sizes too small, probably just so she'd have one more thing to complain about?
It was weird because they found the people and the person apparently drove home and then came back to get her shoes. And she's like, oh, they're a little small. And then when she's freaking out, she's like, they're two sizes. And I know that she was kind of desperate. I guess that's better than wearing one of Emmett's shoes. But I still, I'm a little amazed. I guess it's just too heavy, but that they didn't have a second pair of shoes. I don't know how common that is with how racers pack. But you would think it, with a decent amount of people around, I mean, maybe she could have traded at some point. Maybe she did, but it was a bit much.
I don't know. Like, personally, okay, I'm someone that if I lost one of my shoes on the race, I have giant feet, I would be screwed. How do you even get your foot into a pair of shoes that is two sizes too small? Like, how did those even reach your whole foot? I think she was being hyperbolic.
She might have been, because I think, like, when I buy, like, I'll try on shoes, like, I wear an 11. Sometimes you put on a 10 and a half, and I can't get my foot in it. So it's like, I couldn't, like, if it was size 9, I don't even understand. You'd have to like get out like a scissors and like cut part of it or something. There's no way my foot would fit in that. So it was probably a half size, but that didn't sound as cool. So
she doesn't sound quite as wounded if she's screaming about how her shoes are half a size too small.
These are 9.5s. I can only run in 10s. I don't think I've got the craziness enough. And I don't, I, Jillian, like I talked about with Mike last week, is a good racer. This is, she has, she's fun when she freaks out. It's entertaining, you know? So I don't want to give her trouble in a way, because we have some racers that are really steely or really laid back. So you get her yelling, we're in big trouble. It's great. And I apologize to all the listeners for you holding your ears when I did that. But yeah, it's fun, but freaking out over that, I could tell they were feeling the stress.
I mean, she is basically Canadian Rachel.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, she doesn't cry as much. She's cried a little bit, but she does. And Rachel does this too, where both of them tend to freak out sometimes on the, I mean, I could see the final task understandably freaking out, and that was ridiculous. But sometimes she freaks out over the smaller things, like, and then the bigger things she's fine with. That's kind of the weird thing on Rachel's side, too.
Yeah, it's like you pick one thing and all of your energy goes into being upset over that. And it's usually not even a consequential thing. And you know, that works for some people. Again, it's like you just got to feel your feelings and get them out. And that makes for entertaining television and really affects the race far less than you would think.
Right. I don't think it really, I mean, if you're bad at golf, whether she freaked out or not, it's not going to really impact it too much.
But we'll get to the golf.
Yeah, I don't want to jump ahead because we do have our detour, 1867 or 1879, and nobody loves 1867.
No love for beer. I don't know what's wrong with these people.
Poor owner of the Moosehead Breweries, really. I mean, they did get a nice little plug. John was thrilled to be there. He's long lived the Moose, but I can't remember. I don't think there's been a detour this season that no one has done at all.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised. Like, the only thing I can think of is maybe it was hard to find. Like, maybe people weren't sure where it was, and the Taffy was right there. Because the Taffy is kind of more of a landmarky thing, and he said you have to go downtown and locate the brewery. Maybe people just didn't want to mess with it.
It's possible. It might be one of those situations where the brewery task, actually, assuming you were good, would take less time, but you add 20 minutes to find it or something. And it's one of those weird things where it is, I guess that's a little more of a needle in the haystack, not the most ridiculous one, versus the kind of, and our top teams always tend to pick the power through task or the, like, just do it and it's going to take so long. And it was interesting, you know, that Joel and Ashley, who usually kind of take the other one, didn't do it. But in general, it does not surprise me that the top two, you know, teams both went for the molasses right away.
Yeah, that really didn't surprise me either. I got to pause the podcast here and take a little break because I've got a strange pregnancy craving right now. Right now, what I really need in my life is some vinegar taffy.
You fooled me there for a second. But yeah, especially when you add cups of vinegar. And don't think that's odd to use cups of vinegar for something, which apparently did not really impact. I mean, maybe it caused something to happen with the slow boiling or whatnot, but it didn't seem to. I thought when that came up, it was going to be like they were going to get to the spot and the guy was going to be like, sorry, you have too much vinegar or that color is not right. But instead, maybe it was just a setup for their unfortunate errors later in the leg.
Yeah, it sure seemed like Frankie and Amy got a lot of this kind of edit where they're like, we know exactly what they're doing, what we're doing. And then they would do something totally different. Like, we know exactly. All you have to do is follow the recipe. 4.5 cups of vinegar.
Yeah.
They really got the dodo edit this week.
And this is kind of, I thought, I mean, when we started the season, I thought they kind of seemed like a team that might make mistakes like this. And they've had a few during the season, but they always seemed like, you know, they've had issues where, you know, Frankie couldn't do a roadblock or something, but they would tend to then power through. But I guess when you're down to four teams and the errors they made, especially on the roadblock, you know, but this was just kind of a setup, I guess, that showed that maybe they weren't going to be our sneaky finalist.
Yeah, I suppose not. Like, they really kind of brought up the rear the whole time. And I'm kind of amazed. Like, I was waiting for Amy to take a bite of that taffy and say, oh, I think we did it wrong. This tastes like vinegar. And she's like, nope, this is delicious. I'm thinking, are you just making this up? Or was there a scene we didn't see where they had to throw it all out and start over again?
That may be the case. And maybe they just didn't have the coverage on the camera or something, because they did. The show went out of its way to circle the thing to show, hey, look at this dummy who said the wrong thing, with apologies to Amy, and or did the wrong thing. And then all of a sudden they were in last. So I guess it was like, we're just going to get them there. But and because of the face off, really, they could have spent forever there and, you know, would have at least stayed close to one team.
Yeah, I guess that's probably it. It's like you aren't going to, like, that's not going to break your race. The face-off is going to break your race no matter how far behind you are at this point.
And I wonder, too, if the show wasn't that tough on this, because, again, they don't really want a situation. I mean, that final roadblock was set up so everyone would be there, even after the face-off. So it's basically, they don't really want this to be a total killer for them. So I'm not saying the show pulled any shenanigans. We did see one time where the color was off on one of them. But in general, I think the show probably wasn't focused on just blocking a team this early.
And I mean, that's the thing with some of these subjective shows, some of these subjective tasks. It's like you can make it a little bit easier if you know that you need people to be out of there at a specific time.
Right. And I mean, honestly, I don't think making taffy was the most thrilling task I've ever seen. It did lead to some kind of crazy, like gooey horror film type things being pulled out and stuff. But in general, I wasn't that thrilled by it. I again would have been sad if teams got to go to the brewery, though, and then were not able to drink a beer, which seemed to be the way we were heading once again.
I don't even think John got to drink a beer. I'd have to go back and watch it again. But if they're not even letting John have beer, you know the racers are not getting any.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it was all about the bottles, and too bad on that end. But it did lead us well into our face-off at the Algonquin Resort.
Yes, unfortunately, still no chugging a beer face-off.
You know, they really have zoned in on the sports face-offs. I mean, we've had four face-offs now, and they've still focused on the sports. I mean, I did find this very funny, but, you know, that's mainly just due to the ineptitude of basically everyone except for Joel, of course, who looked like he had obviously golfed before in his life. I could tell just, I mean, not, he's not like a pro or something, but he looked like he knew what he was doing, which I guess most people eventually do a little bit of golfing, but I feel like I'm not a good golfer at all, but I'm still better than most of the people that were on this. So I haven't golfed in years. So, hey, but Joel, I think, would have taken the cake.
Yeah, I've never actually played real golf. I've been to pitch and putt, and I've done mini golf, and I still think I might have been able to best Emmett.
Well, it's kind of weird because they're on the top of a hill. So the course is set up where it rolls down. So it's not like they're going uphill, which is a whole nother thing. But so if you can at least make, and I'm speaking, you know, we saw some teams struggle with this, make some sort of contact and get it to roll. I know the grass is a little high, but the ball is, by gravity's sake, going to head in the right direction. So they designed it where I guess you could overhit, but I don't think they expected, you know, everyone to be hitting the trees and then missing. And then, I mean, it did lead to some fun. But here's my question before we get into that. What do you think about another face-off on the final four?
I think the final four is a fun place to have a face-off. The face-off is better than just a random bunching point where everybody just shows up at a museum and they're like, yeah, you guys can't go in for another 6 hours. This is a way to gather everybody in one place and get them all kind of more or less together. And it also gives a team a chance to possibly pull ahead in an interesting new way. And it did actually end up having some impact on the order. So I thought that was kind of an entertaining place to put it. And we had a face-off. I believe we had one at the Final Four last season as well. It was either Final Four or Final Five.
I think we did have one in the Final Four because I think how it worked is that they did the curling and Simi and Ope were last. And then they went and did that.
The paper recycling, right?
I'm trying to remember if this was the recycling or if this is where they did the bartender thing. I'm trying to remember
with the script. Yeah, you're right.
Come on in and all that I could go on that one for a while, but I think that's how it worked. And this similar thing, you did a face off, then a complicated roadblock and everyone ended up at the roadblock. So I think that's kind of the formula. So it worked out. Okay. And you're right. Joel and Ashley, I think Steph and Kristen were at least a little ways ahead of the group. So this brought them back to Joel and Ashley, who then passed them at least for the time being. So, and Mike called it, we were talking last week and Mike pretty much guaranteed, he said that no matter what happened, Frankie and Amy were going to end up last and get the penalty. And that's exactly what happened.
Yep. That was not a shocker. I mean, it was a shocker that they were as bad at golf as they ended up being. Like, I mean, we've known all along. We called it before the show started. We thought they were going to be first out. Neither one of us predicted they were going to make the Final Four. We knew there was going to be at least one glaring blind spot. And apparently this was it. But I had not expected that much fail.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's when I have not played in a long time, but when I had played, if I missed the ball, I did not count that as a stroke, but I'm guessing they're probably the professionals. If they, ever missed the ball would probably count it or something. But I thought you had to actually make contact for something to count as a stroke. But it seemed like every time Frankie and Amy missed, they added another number. Not that it really mattered. But I mean, it was laughable. I think they were at like 28 or something. And I was like, yeah, that this was not their game, even more than the volleyball previously. But it did lead to the show really enjoyed watching them just fail. And Jillian and Emmett were not very good either.
No, and I guess we found the one thing that Emmett can't do.
Yeah, this and try to give a speech as the first prime minister are the things he struggles the most with, apparently, on the whole show.
Yeah, so, you know, when they come back for All-Stars, as I'm sure they inevitably will, we just give Emmett one of those roadblocks where you have to play golf and give a speech at the same time.
Yeah, and I did enjoy also, I thought Emmett, this would be something Emmett would be good at. Like, I had a feeling Jillian wouldn't be great. And it's not because she's a woman. It's just because
she's Jillian.
Yeah, it didn't seem like something she would do. And I thought Steph and Kristen would be better. I mean, Kristen really took a shot and was great at hitting right into the trees. But you know, they still ended up second out. But I would have just assumed, being athletes, that somehow they were a little better. But it almost was better that everyone was kind of terrible, because then it almost evened the playing field and let it, you know, Jillian, of course, freaked out and called it the worst thing ever. And they had some fun there. So it was fun on that end, even if I would enjoy, hopefully down the road, getting some face-offs that are different. But hey, we got two more face-offs. I think it'll be around next season.
Yeah, it seems like it's working for Canada. How'd you like the Foley artist effect? Every time somebody hit anything into the trees, they would play a sound of an eagle dying.
I'm not sure I even noticed that, but that's clever. Are you saying that they did not hit a bird and kill bird every time they hit in the trees? That there wasn't like they pan at the end and there's like, it's like one of those movies where all the birds die and there's just all these birds across the trees. And they're like, Steph and Kristen, 5 shots, 12 birds, or I don't know, that isn't even possible, but you know, something like that.
Well, it is if you hit the ball exactly right.
Yeah, I guess you could hit like 3 at once.
You could hit like a whole nest.
That would be a highly populated woods next to the golf course. But yeah, there was some fun there. I enjoyed the one point where Frankie and Amy had 18 shots and Jillian and Emma had one, because we had our nice lady there holding the sign. And then it was 28-5. And I mean, just the juxtaposition of 18-1 was nice. It took him 18 shots to get as far as Emmett's one shot, which was not a professionally amazing shot.
Yeah, I was waiting for the lady to have to go back up the hill and get more numbers.
We only assumed they do 10. We didn't think it'd get to 28. We're down. We like eventually they just like do those like video game things where they just left it at 29. Like we don't have a, I guess they would have a 3, but I'm trying to think of, I get to 99, I guess, or something. But amazingly though, Frankie still had fun. That was the interesting thing we saw this like too, was, you know, and it's helped her really well, but we've seen a case where Frankie seems to be unflappable. Well, Amy seemed to really take it hard that they were struggling, much more than Frankie did.
Well, Frankie has kind of taken the lead on this team over and over again. And I think it's interesting to me. I think they probably didn't have any idea they were going to go as far as they did. I think anything probably past final 6 for the two of them is gravy, at least in Frankie's mind. So Frankie's just having fun with it at this point.
Right. And I think Amy got to a point where especially you get to the final roadblock and they've got a real shot to make the final 3 and beat Jillian and Emmett. And for her, that's just, you know, she sees it and is like, hey, we could actually win. And Frankie still, and this, I don't know if this explains why they lost, but Frankie still seemed to be in that mindset. But hey, if they had been more serious, maybe they wouldn't have got as far, because I think one of the reasons they did so well, the one leg they really struggled is when they got really focused on getting first, where I feel like they're kind of laid back. Let's just do this, especially on Frankie's end, has been one of the reasons they've been able to do so well.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely onto something there. I think that's exactly, it's why they've been fun to watch and it's why they've done as well as they did. And I think as the second it got into Amy's head that they might actually have a shot at it, the pressure came back, and that was what destroyed them in the end.
Right. And this was definitely a case of, I wouldn't call it killer fatigue, but I would say, you know, the stress of the race and being so close to the end caused them to just not think logically. And we saw it sort of, I mean, in the case of Jillian and Emmett, but they did finally adjust, but they got to a point where they just, and the golf, there was really no helping the golf. This is not really about the golf. The golf, they were, you know, they were going to finish last no matter what, but they still had a really good chance. Despite that being last the whole leg, there was a real chance given Jillian and Emmett's mistake that they could sneak in there. And I kind of thought it before the leg started, I thought if they were going to beat somebody, it was going to be Jillian and Emmett, but they just, you know, it's tough to do that. It's tough to keep kind of with these top focus teams to sneak past them. Cause I don't think there were that many legs where Frankie and Amy were in front of these top teams.
No, they're definitely or not. And I think we got to give props to the show on this count. It's really hard to make golf look like something fun to watch on television, and they managed it. So good for them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where they tried everything. They did that nice montage of all the misses and all the terrible swings. And, you know, it was one of those things where the situation played in the show's favor, where they could make it more fun. But this was more fun to watch than the volleyball, because I figured the volleyball, we saw a lot of shot points of just like they were just like 7-5, 8-5, 9-5. And I was like, why are we watching so much of this? You know, this is too much. But here they edited it better, where there was never a case where I thought, okay, we get the idea. It wasn't even really about, half the time I didn't know where they were on the course, and it didn't really matter. It was just kind of about, we've got something funny here and we're going to really milk it.
Yeah. Well, I think the lesson we learn here is that golf is one of those sports where the worse you are at it, the more fun it is to watch. And that's not true of every sport.
Right. Mediocre golfing, or good golfing especially, but let's say everybody shot a 4 or 6 or whatever, it'd be like, it's like, yeah, this might be fun if I was doing it, but this is really boring to watch. But here, because even the, besides Joel, like I said, his first shot really set them up. Everyone else was just full of miscues, and that made it fun. And that did lead to another reason why I think some of these sports face-offs can be fun, I guess, because you show people just being terrible.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, props to the golf. I thought, as soon as John introduced it, I thought, this is a fantastic idea for a face-off. It's not going to take people all day. It's something that theoretically everyone can kind of do. It doesn't require a whole lot of physical stamina. You're not going to have anybody passing out from heat stroke. And it requires everybody to dress up in great outfits. There's really no downside to this, except for the fact that if you're good at it, golf is not fun to watch.
Right. And yeah, the outfits were nice. And yeah, that is another thing about the heat. That also made the volleyball a little much. We were like, wow, that looks really painful. It's really hot. And here it was kind of a situation where we're like, oh, that looks kind of fun. You know, I know this is stressful, but it's cool. It's you're watching them play. So it's kind of like the curling last season, where I was like, this is kind of, especially with Brent and Sean's, you know, curling whisperer or whatever. But, you know, this is fun. Whereas the water polo was just kind of painful to watch, or, you know, the water, I guess it was water polo. Water polo makes me think of them swimming around and like doing water polo. But, you know, that was painful because of the penalties and such, and the inability to do anything. So, again, I think the second one worked out better.
Yeah. Maybe this is a pattern going forward. Like, one of the face-offs will be incredibly physically taxing and reward athleticism, and the other one just kind of rewards, I don't know what it rewards. Aim. Who knows?
Ability to hit a small ball with a large club, which Frankie and Amy did not have.
Ability to hit a target.
Pretty much. So I guess we move on to a really hard roadblock.
Yeah, this was kind of insanely hard. Maybe one of the hardest ones all season.
Yeah, because they like memory tasks here, but the memory task, like for me, you just say, memorize these 15 things. It would take me a long time. Forget the blindfold, the being led up the hill, the touch and smell. And this task, if I got stuck doing this one, oh my, I don't think I'd make the Latin mistake. So I probably could still beat Frankie and Amy and Jillian and Emmett, but this would be terrible. It's such a combination of tricky things, memory, smell, the whole thing. It was a real challenge. I give the show credit because a lot of times I'm not sure shows are willing to do something that theoretically teams might never finish.
This was one of those ones, if they'd had it early in the season, five people would have taken a penalty.
Right. And especially, you know, and I love the fact that this was such a hard roadblock and teams are like, we really subconsciously just want to make this so much harder. And the fact that I wonder if Amy especially actually got them all in Latin and then didn't matter. Like she did even the harder task and then failed.
And I was so annoyed. Can I just say, why did the guy tell them what they were doing wrong? Why didn't he let them keep doing it all day?
I think that had to have been something the show set up so that they wouldn't be doing it all day. So there might be a final race to the pit stop. But I don't know. I mean, it's weird to me. I mean, I guess they had to consider that someone might do this, because if not, you don't even put the Latin phrase on there.
Right.
Because they created these kinds of things. You put it on there thinking somebody's going to do something dumb. But it wasn't. And what was crazy is he told them what they were doing wrong. And Frankie and Amy decided, we have to do both. That's where I was talking about in terms of just the stress. You're just not thinking clearly. Of course, I say this, you know, sometimes when I haven't had dinner and I'm hungry, I can't think clearly. So this, you know, they're on a race and they're trying to win $250,000. I'm not really picking on them, but it's really unfortunate that they got this close and had an opportunity. If they just could have taken a second and figured it out.
Yeah, it was really heartbreaking to watch them, to watch their thought process and know that if you yourself were in a stressful position, you could just as easily have made the same mistake. The challenge itself, it's really kind of, this is a challenge formula we see a lot. Like in U.S. Amazing Race, I believe this is the same as the salami task that led to the famous Rachel Riley, the Amazing Race is supposed to be fun and good breakdown. They've done this on Amazing Race Canada before, I believe, with cheeses.
Right. The eating. You have to eat different ones, I think. Yeah.
You had to eat it and then identify it. And, you know, over here, you get to know what they are and use your senses to figure out what they are and then run across to this other place where you have to say what they are again. This is kind of a popular format. And the more things you have in the mix, the harder it is, I think. And 15 is a lot of things. I don't even think there were that many cheeses. And I remember Robin Ryan being there for hours and hours.
Right. 15. That's what made it hard, because if you make it 10, then it's challenging. But 15 and the names were all different. And, you know, you have to see people over and over go catnip and all these lemon balm or all these different things, which I found entertaining. But it was the fact that Steph did it on 4 tries. And actually came really close before that, got like 13 out of 15 early on. That's pretty awesome to do this on 4 tries.
Yeah, that was impressive. So I guess maybe it was the kind of thing where, and, you know, we saw this happen where, you know, I think it was Jillian and Emmett are looking at it and they're thinking, well, it must be harder than we're thinking it is because people are still here. So we must have to do the you know, singular hardest thing. And here's the question I had. Here's what I was wondering. If you have any familiarity with these plants before, do you think it helped? And do you think anybody did?
I think it would definitely help because, you know, me, I'd come into it and I would know nothing. I mean, but if you have somebody that, and I just assume knowing Joel that he was like, well, I'm a gardener and I know 8 of these plants already. And I also thought his diligent kind of approach, he did okay. He got through it in 10 tries, but I thought this might be one that Joel would be the best at. But I think they probably, yeah, you got these top teams that aren't getting it right away. But, and I gave Frankie and Amy kind of trouble for overthinking it. Jillian and Emmett really overthinked it for that too, in that that's the thing. If that judge doesn't tell them what they're doing wrong, it really levels the playing field in the sense where I don't know how long it would have taken them to figure it out. I don't know. They might have both taken penalties at some point. So that, in a way, that I give Julian Emmett credit for the fact that they figured it out when he gave it to them. But it would have been really interesting if that didn't happen. I know I kind of veered off from our original question, which I don't remember what it was, but I'm just not going to circle back here or whatever. But it was still a very entertaining task, but, and it, you know, it did, it was showed, it showed some real mettle by some of these teams that got through it. I don't know. Maybe it did. Steph may have known some things already, but Steph and Kristen have shown an ability to, they're strong physically, but they do not really struggle on task, assuming they don't cut their fingers.
Yeah, that is true. They tend to keep such a level head about everything that's thrown at them. It really, I think it really helps them along the way. And I think it's entirely possible that, you know, you might have a little familiarity, like everybody knows what sage smells like, right?
True.
And there are three different ones that smell like lemon, so you just have to kind of feel what the shapes are. There are shortcuts, I think. And there were probably ways in which you could break it down to make it much easier. Like, you know, you got three lemon ones, you got like the food ones, you've got the ones that probably don't smell very different. You just have to feel them out. Like there was that one fern that was a foot tall and none of the other ones were that tall.
Right. And that's the thing that I'm probably underestimating is if you can memorize the 15 phrases, which I mean, most people can't, eventually you come up with ways to do it. The feel may be probably as important or, you know, more important than even the smell.
Yeah. Well, and hens and chicks don't smell like anything. As I recall, my parents planted them a couple of years when I was a kid, and they were just like, they feel a very specific way. Like they're succulents. They don't feel like anything else out there. That one's easy to remember. And so I think there were ways of reducing it to an easier task. And I think to your previous point, I can't imagine anybody at the Final Four taking a penalty. Like Canada is a very penalty happy, amazing race, but at the Final Four, you have to assume that somebody's going to get done before you.
Yeah, and I was thinking more of a case where they just, I mean, you would think that when teams went far enough, they would go back and read their clue. Like they wouldn't understand, and that probably would have completed it. But let's assume they never, because even when they read their clue, they still didn't get it, Frankie and Amy. But let's assume they never read their clue. My thought wouldn't be just quitting. It would be a case where it would get dark, and they would just keep going over and over with the Latin. And eventually nothing would happen. Now, I doubt that would be the case, but I'm trying to think of the situation where everyone just keeps thinking they miss one or something. Now, Jillian probably would have lost her mind well before it got dark, the way things were going. I also found it weird that Frankie and Amy, you know, they get up there and had only done like their second try after all this time. So I got the impression they really spent a ton of time trying to learn everything in Latin. So by the time they had to start over, it was just too much. I mean, Jillian, it was, you know, five attempts before she even got it. But it was weird that I thought, oh, we're really there. Like they were gone, Jillian Nemeth. And it was the second try for Frankie and Amy. I was like, what? And we really didn't even see them get it right except for they snuck it into the montage at the very end. But it was kind of sad, and you could definitely see where it was going in advance.
Yeah. Well, and they couldn't have been that far behind because, like you say, it was still light out and John didn't have to come and get them. Like you notice on US Amazing Race, especially, we've gotten more and more into Phil like walking out onto the course and telling people, yeah, you don't even get to go to the pit stop.
Yeah. I don't think that John has had to do that too much, but you're right. I'm guessing they got it within a half hour or something like that. It wasn't close enough, or maybe just due to time, where the show actually tried to sell it like, okay, we're going to edit it. You know, I guess that Frankie and Amy are far enough where we didn't get clips of them going, we can still do it. We can still make it. But it might've just been the length, the time of the show. And of course we did get one more product placement there at the end where you had to, it used the hands-free calling system to call John Montgomery so you could find out where the pit stop was. And that was a bit much too, but considering that it's not really that, it's not unique to this particular Chevy. Most new cars have some sort of calling system. I get kind of annoyed in my car when my car answers the phone and I'm like, whoa, I'm not ready. So it does. It's just another way. This episode just kind of felt like they were trying to get all the product stuff in because we're not going to have that in the finale.
Well, it'd be nice if we didn't have it in the finale. Yeah, I remember actually season 1, episode 1 of Amazing Race Canada. I remember being outraged because the first thing they had to do was use OnStar to navigate somewhere. And I'm like, what? This is the Amazing Race. You don't get help. with your navigation. What the hell?
It's like having that is bad, but it's one of those things where they start the US one and it's like, Phil will call you on your car's thing. And I'm under this video and I'm like, already, we can't even get out of the United States and we're already doing this. It's like, please, please just stop. But I did enjoy the episode overall because I felt there was a lot of drama. And I guess we should address the Ashley question, because what happened, you know, obviously we have the case where Frankie and Amy notice that Jillian and Emmett are now, I think, doing English or it was something like that. And they go and ask Ashley, what'd you guys do? And Joel is still not done at this point. So to me, it's very obvious that what she did. There's some people have said, oh, well, why'd she do that? She could have found a way to get Jillian and Emmett out. But that's overthinking it, right? I mean, that's too cute. You've got to just, I don't see any problem with what she did. I think it was right.
Yeah, I think there's really, at that point, all Ashley's thinking about is how do we not be last? Like, how do we get someone so far behind us that we make it to the finals? Because she's really, you know, she's got to prioritize her thoughts. Like, if you were thinking at a higher level, if she knew that Joel was going to get it right on that try, then maybe you think about, well, who would I rather be with in the finals? But in the moment, you're not thinking about that. You're thinking about, how do I not be the person that gets eliminated at this point? And Frankie and Amy are low-hanging fruit.
Right. To me, it's easy at home to sit there and kind of think from the strategy. And we don't know exactly how long they'd been there and what was going on and how Joel looked very frustrated. And so it's one of those cases where it would be, if she told them and then they finish fourth, I mean, the risk of getting to the end with Jillian and Emmett is much, you know, that's not the concern. The concern is making the final three. So, well, I could see why Frankie and Amy are like, really, you know, but why believe her? Of course she's going to lie to you, right? And she's a terrible liar. The way she looked down and mumbled, you had to know she wasn't telling the truth.
Yeah, she's really doesn't have much of a poker face, does she? Which is funny because her race partner is basically Mr. Poker Face.
Yeah, it was really, you know, and I actually saw they've had Ashley be like, you know, they've been U-turned twice. They've gone through a lot. Like, she's going to help somebody. It's like, really? No, it's I'm glad that she did that. I felt, you know, you feel bad for Frankie and Amy, but it's like, it's right there in the clue. You see the other team doing it. They were just, you know, too much stress.
Well, I think my favorite part of that whole thing was Ashley, like, giving the camera like a full on Jim Halpert. She talks to Frankie about, well, here's what I think we have to be doing. We have to memorize everything. Then she turns and looks directly into the camera and smirks. It was fantastic.
It's like this idea, like, really? Are they serious? Do they think I'm going to help them? You know, it's like that look, like, I can't believe what I'm just seeing right here. But yeah, because she even talked completely differently. It was like she did not move her face. It was this total like, well, no, that's how we're doing it. That's what we're doing. Thinking in her head, do not flinch. Do not blink. This is our chance. But hey, Frankie and Amy, I think, too, it's possible teams have helped them, because like we saw with last week with the U-turn where Jillian and Emmett are like, we want to bring them along. Maybe there have been cases where they've been helped in the past, so they haven't really seen that kind of cutthroat side of the show.
I think that's probably very true. The one thing I could think of, like, just to play devil's advocate on this point, the one time I think it would make sense for somebody to try to further along a lie in the service of saving Frankie and Amy, it's definitely not when Ashley is doing it. I think it would make sense, however. Steph and Kristen are out of there first. They probably don't want to race against Jillian and Emmett, who are having an off leg this week, admittedly. But if they notice that these two teams are making the same mistake after they pass their task, I think maybe at that point it does make sense if they can get Frankie and Amy aside and point out what they're doing wrong. That's the one point where at which I think it makes sense for somebody to consider doing that. But I do not think that Joel and Ashley should have ever entertained it.
Right. Like, that is a good point, because let's say you finish and Jillian's not up there about ready to finish, or Frankie, if they're just standing there, that is, if somebody's really, I can see the benefit of that. I mean, there's always the danger of, but we don't know where we're going. We haven't called John on our OnStar system yet. We don't know if there's, we assume the next thing's a pit stop, and maybe there's another task. But so I think it's still too cute, but that, at least to me, if they were really looking at the finals and going, we can't beat Jillian and Emmett, that would be the play to try and get them out.
Yeah, well, and I think they are looking at the finals and thinking, we absolutely can beat Jillian and Emmett. Look at how terrible they were today.
Right. Steph and Kristen might be a different scenario.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they haven't really, if you take out, you know, they had a little problems on that leg, but even that leg with the finger, I think they were still, they weren't like sixth or something. The only time they finished even pretty far back, I think, is the first leg when they got the express pass. And even then they were sixth or something out of 10. So Steph and Kristen have shown that they seem to be very stable and can, you know, but Jillian and Emmett are physically strong, but, you know, you give them the wrong task, they could totally melt down. And next week, there are no teams below them that are going to let them off the hook.
So, yeah, there was a play out there to get rid of Jillian and Emmett, but I don't think it was a strong one, and I don't think it was one that Joel and Ashley should have tried. And I think we do need to talk about Joel passing the task and his reaction when he passed that task, because that's a side of Joel we have not seen on this leg at all.
Yeah, and I think, you know, looking ahead, this kind of brings up to me, I look at the finals, and this is as strong a final three as that we've had, I think, in the three seasons. Last season was fairly strong, but in the three seasons of four seasons of the show, I feel like this is a really strong final three. This is the strongest final three this cast could have. But I look at it and I'm thinking in terms of edit, in terms of how they act. And I don't think Jillian and Emmett are going to win. I think if I look at the three teams, Steph and Kristen have the first female team. They're the strongest. I mean, I know they've won the same amount of legs, but I bet you their average placement is higher. Joel and Ashley have a very strong edit and are also really strong racers. And they've really been set up for us to root for them. And I am also, along with Steph and Kristen. I don't know what Jillian and Emmett's story is right now. And I also feel like the show isn't really setting them up to win.
I would agree with that. I think it's looking very much like a Brenchel edit or like a Green Team edit, where they've been the team you don't want to win all along. Like, I don't know. I'm sure there are people out there, like, especially among the Big Brother Canada fans, who are rooting for them and have been all along. But I really don't see a story in there for someone who doesn't have any Jillian and Emmett context to want them to win.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be a shock. I mean, it wouldn't be Matt and Dana, you know, so it's second week in a row I brought that up. But
you're really sore about that, aren't you?
Well, no, actually, I picked them to win at the start and I won a pool I was in because they won. But it didn't make any sense to me by the story. And I hate to read too much into it. But also, just like, to go back to what you said about the way Joel reacted, it's like, it's the whole time, even seeing her lie, it's one of those cases where they've been very steady. They have a great relationship, but we really see them really want it and really play for it. And while I still think Steph and Kristen are going to win, and not just because we picked them and not just because they're my only fantasy team left, I think they're going to win. And I think the season's been set up that way. I would not be stunned if Joel and Ashley won. I think their odds aren't as good, but they're really good racers and they've been very consistent and they're cool people.
Yeah. And I think if we're talking in terms of, you know, who do you think is going to win versus who do you want to win? The way things have been set up, I think Steph and Kristen, I agree. I think they are going to win, but I really want Joel and Ashley to win at this point, because we've seen them at first they were an okay team. They weren't a great team. And then they figured it out. And then they've been very steady. And we've watched them get into the spirit of every aspect of this, like passing the challenges and excelling at challenges, and then getting a little bit into the gameplay and becoming a little bit sneaky. And that gives them the character moment. And I think they're the most well-rounded team. Like, Steph and Kristen have been a surprise and a delight. They've been stronger characters than I might have pegged them for, and I'd be happy with a win from them as well. But I think you got to go into this final leg really wanting Joel and Ashley to pull it out.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice, like a wealth of riches or something, because even if Jillian and Emmett win, they're not Gino and Jesse. They're not the Tims. They're not even Mickey and Pete. I look at that, and if I see them win, I think, you know, I like this team. They seem like nice people. They kind of freak out a little bit. So it's one of those weird cases where there's no team that I'd say, oh my God, please, please don't let them win. Or, oh wow, if Nick and Matt win, I'll be kind of bored. But we knew that would never happen after they're at it. But you know what I'm saying? There's no team where it's like, I could look at all three and say, I'd be good. The season is good if any of them win. But you're right. I mean, Joel and Ashley, too, they've really, I don't know, all the teams seem to have enjoyed the race. You don't have any grumblers or grumpies. Even Jillian's enjoying it, I think, even when she freaks out. But Joel and Ashley, like you said, the word you said is embraced it. I feel like they're just really the type. They're the type of kind of team that I really like that they cast. And I feel like Amazing Race Canada does a good job casting parent-child teams or even family members that just are cool to watch and be around.
Yeah, it's really like you want to have a beer with any of these people, really.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have pegged that for Jillian and Emmett, too. It's like one of those things where I kind of expected them to be him to be a little more like a, I don't know, a Jim, you know, or something, or a little more like him to be a little more overbearing in terms of the competitiveness. I think he is, but he's pretty humble. Like you even saw at the end, you know, they asked him what he needed to do. And he's like, we're going to have to work hard and get lucky. When you see that, you don't have somebody coming in and third going, we're better than these teams. Those guys are jokes. We're better than them. Why are we third? I mean, you've seen teams do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're in the finals and Phil or John's like, I don't know if there's been much with John, but it was like, you guys are in the finals. Congrats. And teams are like, we should have won that trip. We shouldn't be second. And I'm like, I hate those teams. I don't hate them personally, but you know, I hate them on the show as characters. We don't have anyone like that this season.
No, we really don't. Like everybody. And maybe this is a Canada thing. I feel like there's a lot of Canadian humility. Like even when Jillian and Emmett are arguing, you hear Emmett drop a couple of stories in there. And I think there's a little bit more self-effacement on among Canadian racers than American ones. I think it's a culture thing.
Yeah. And he does handle when she freaks out in general, he handles it pretty well. I mean, he doesn't start yelling back. He does. I mean, every once in a while, sometimes he just kind of ignores her and does his thing. But he's you can tell why they work as a team and even used to, you know, work as a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very Brendan kind of reaction.
You're like, yes, yes, honey, it is. I know we'll do it, though. oh, I got to mention this task. How do you like to be that guy who after they miss has to walk them back? Like I noticed this as we were doing the roadblock where you have this guy, you have the guy who has to say, sorry, you're not, you got it wrong, wrong language. And then you have this other guy that grabs their arm and guides them back. And to have to do it with some of these teams like 10 times, it's like that doesn't seem like the best task to have as an involved person on a roadblock.
Yeah, well, and especially they're all venting to him while it's happening.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of curse words, probably a lot of, you know, and he's just probably can't say anything. It's like, please don't fall down. It is my job to lead you back to this. But I felt a little for that guy, given the stress involved. But are we ready for questions?
I think we're ready for questions.
All right. Let's see here. What we've already got some that we've addressed.
Yes. You know,
we had the has a worst hole of golf ever been played? My guess is probably yes, but it'd be hard. You know, we got Justin Feinberg asked us if we could have golfed a better score on a par three than Frankie and Amy, if the two of us were playing together. What do you think on that?
I think we could have done better than 28 strokes.
Yeah. My thought is I'm not a great golfer, but I think, you know, in the 6, 7, 8 range, we could probably swing that. Maybe 9. That would have beaten us a few teams at least. Not Joel and Ashley, but I think we would have done it.
I think we could have done okay. I'm not worried about this particular face-off.
No. Even more than volleyball, where I feel like I'm okay at volleyball, but there's a few more variations there. Here, you're just like, we're going down the hill with it.
Pretty much. Like, you just let physics play your game for you.
Pretty much. So you got any questions here?
Yeah, I've got a good one, actually. Matthew Bayless wants to know, are you disappointed we didn't get to see Julian Lowell schooling the others at the blindfold task?
Well, that's interesting. So, you know, obviously Lowell would feel more comfortable that way since he doesn't see very well. But are we to believe the idea that his sense of smell is heightened because he can't see very well? Would he automatically have done better? He would have been better walking up and down the hill. But do you believe this would have automatically given him an advantage?
I don't know if it would have automatically given him an advantage, but I think it plays into he would have been much more comfortable with that blindfold on. And I think that was a good start already. And I know that he still has a limited range of vision, but did you notice there was Braille on those plaques?
Oh, I don't didn't
know how
that.
He is at Braille, but I have to imagine they would have had to put a rule in place that you can't read the Braille.
Yeah, or you know, maybe the Braille only leads you to the Latin. So it would have been like a double whammy where you use the Braille and then it's like, sorry, that's the wrong language. And you think he means the Braille, but he really means the Latin. There's so many ways it could have thrown it off here. So let me see here. Lindsay Wilson on Facebook, she mentioned she thought Jillian got a particularly negative edit this week. Now, to me, it seemed pretty similar to how it's been. And I think, like we've talked about in the past, with so many like mellow teams, I feel like anytime Jillian freaks out, we're going to see it. But do you think it was worse than normal?
I didn't think it was worse than normal. I think we've seen her, like, this was pretty much Jillian being Jillian. Like, I was more surprised, like, I was more surprised at watching Steph freak out, to be honest.
Yeah, that's happened a few times, mainly at the out of the leg where she cut her finger, understandably so, after she pulled out the machete and tried to slice her hand off. So, but I think the stress was getting a little bit to everybody, even to Joel, which I found hard to believe.
Yeah, well, Joel, like, actually jumped up in the air with joy and was like triumphantly screaming when he got the task.
I've been waiting to yell like this all season.
It was like all of the stress of the race kind of exploded in one beautiful fireworks show coming out of Joel.
Well, maybe when they win next week, or if they win, he won't just say, "Why, thank you, John. We believe we are a good team." He'll be like, "Hell yeah, in your face. Take that."
I want the Chris Doherty Van Watu win reaction.
Just like, you know, take off his, rip off his shirt and throw it down on the mat or something.
I want him to go full Hulk.
Yeah, that would be good. So let me see here. Do you have other questions?
We had a few people wanting to know if we're going to throw in any kind of Baylor Wilson references here, because we heard sticky situation as a phrase being uttered. And to that, I have to say, sticky situation is a phrase that's been around much longer than the award-winning song.
It is not copyrighted, at least I don't think it is, by Baylor. So, and Anthony S. even asked if John was a RHAP listener. Well, of course. I mean, who wouldn't be? But I, you know, he just had an amazing interview that I'm sure has caused him to listen to every podcast we've done this season. Hello, John. But but I don't think that was any reference beyond the fact that it was a sticky situation.
It was literally a sticky situation, and for some people, a highly acidic one as well.
Yes. All that vinegar just going overboard. Now, I think there were a few questions having to do with the lie and having to do with golfing and such, but I think we've covered that pretty well. So on my end, I think we're pretty good.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we have gotten through everything we need to get through. We've collected all our bottles and piled them on the pallet.
So what is our hashtag for this episode?
That's a good question. I like vinegar taffy.
That's good too. I was also thinking of like Joel Hulk, maybe.
But no, Joel Hulk is definitely the hashtag.
I just thought of that one right now. But
if you got all the way to the end of this episode, please tweet us with the hashtag Joel Hulk.
Oh, I'm now I really want them to win. So then we can comment on how close we came with our. I expect there will just be a hug and a thank you and a handshake. But I would appreciate the slamming things down and really showing up the other teams like Joel never does.
And maybe one of the other teams will bring some like large bling with them, like Joey and Kelsey got to wear when they won their race.
We can only hope, though. Honestly, I think Steph and Kristen are going to win, but I just hope we have a good finale, because last year's was not my favorite finale.
No, and honestly, I think with the exception of season one, Amazing Race Canada finales have tended to be pretty weak.
Yeah, season one had the great moment where Tim and Tim were everyone getting lost in the zoo is the one I always think back to. And then the really hard final task where it really was up in the air. But you're right. The last two, a team has pulled ahead and just kind of hung out there.
And if that team is Steph and Kristen and they're just like out in front the entire time, that's going to be as boring as I think pretty much any finale I've ever seen. And granted, it is hard to make an exciting finale. I think looking across all the global editions of The Amazing Race, the finale is frequently the second weakest episode.
Yeah, and they're going to Montreal. And of course, they're choosing the usual thing that I'm not a huge fan of, which is putting them really high in the air, because those tasks are usually not that exciting for finales. But I'm still optimistic. I think these three teams are all strong. I don't feel like we have a team that's going to drop out at the beginning and never be heard from again. I think we're in for a fun finale. I just hope that regardless of what happens, no matter who wins, that we have some placement switches and it's not just who got the best cab.
Right. Exactly. Let's hope for a little more season one, a little less season two.
That works for me.
Okay. So again, everybody, I'm sure if you're watching Amazing Race Canada and you're listening to this podcast, you don't need the reminder, but for those of you that are just tuning in late because you want to know how it all ends, and I don't judge you, I've been that person that reads at the last page of the book before I start it, you want to know, I don't live in Canada, how do I watch the show? And the answer to that is, we pool our knowledge of how you watch the show when you yourself are not in Canada, and we share it on our Rob Has a Podcast patron-only Facebook group. So all of the information that is at our disposal about how you can get access to Canadian shows when you're not Canadian yourself, that's where you go to do that. And in order to do that, you become a patron and you go to robhasawebsite.com/Patreon, and you'll get all of the information that you need on how to do that for as little as $5 a month. It really helps us keep the lights on around here, and it also gives you exclusive access to all of the semi-illicit ways that we have of watching Amazing Race Canada. But great magicians never reveal their secrets except to patrons. If you want to engage with us, we love talking Amazing Race Canada with all our listeners. So there are many ways to do that. You can leave a comment at robhaswebsite.com. Scroll down to Reality TV Rehap Ups, find the page for this episode, and leave us a comment. You have all the space you want to do that, and we enjoy getting those. We also enjoy getting tweets, so you may tweet at us. I am at Haymaker Hattie.
I am at the Dan Heaton. And one thing I would love to hear from you guys, either on the website or on Twitter, is who are you rooting for to win? Not who do you think is going to win, but I may just be making assumptions about who people are rooting for. I have a feeling it's spread out because I've heard people enjoy all of them. But who do you really want to win? Because this is a cool final three, so I'm curious to hear it.
Well, I would actually love to hear both. Like, who do you want to win and who do you think is going to win? Like, are you going to be disappointed?
Yeah, I think that I would also like that. I don't know why I had to tell everyone that, but I'm excited for the finale and I really like this cast. So let's hope we get a good one.
I'm hoping for a good one as well. And, you know, maybe a little bit less, let's go jump off something high, which requires no skill, and then get in cabs and be taken around Montreal. Let's hope there's something in there. And maybe it's an animal-based memory task, because God knows we're going to get one of these years. Maybe it is straightforward. Here's hoping for a convoluted path to the $250,000. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you for the finale next week.